funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So I told Conan Brian Lacey was on the show today, and he came out with a nice little statistic for me. And he says, oh yeah, Brian Lacey, he marked Paddy Bradley on his debut back in 1999. And I went, Jesus Christ, what a great place to start the show, Brian. What did he get off you?
He cleaned me out. I think it was 1999, Colin, after our All-Ireland final defeat in 98. We were probably a bit hungover there when we played him.
Yeah, so that was probably in November, if I'm remembering correctly. So you would have been rightly hungover at that stage. Is that your excuse, or is this just Paddy Bradley's done it to Manny's a corner? You were one of the first attacking cornerbacks, so you probably, you were too hungover to be able to take the game to him.
Yeah, I think he was 18 years of age, so I probably didn't do any analysis or anything on him. All-Star in 07. I remember a good story when you're talking about Derry, actually, Mark and Joe Brawley and Jeffrey McGonigal up in, I think it was Ballinascreen. Would that be right, Conan? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the lovely, lovely little ground of Ballinascreen. Yeah, South Derry.
Yeah, it was Mark and Joe, and the fence is right up against the goals at the clubhouse. And Joe used the umpire, a pun on the word, to screen me, so I wasn't able to get near him. And Joe ran around the back of the goals and won the ball at the other side of the pitch, and he was hiding behind Jeffrey McGonigal. It was an interesting day.
So we know that's illegal. We've had a few cases of this recently. He used to run around the back of the goals, and as you'd follow him, the umpire would block you.
he'd pull the umpire, so the umpire got in my way.
Yeah. Well, that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
And yeah, that's right. Yeah, the new rule, you can't deliberately go off the pitch. Yeah, he would have been caught for that. Yeah.
Yeah, he would have been caught for that. What do you remember of Paddy's debut, Conan? You can be nice now, or you can tell the truth.
No, do you know, I actually can't even take credit for it. It was a Derry legend, Gerard O'Kane, who gave me the story. He's also a fountain of knowledge, and he said that he was going down with Owen Bradley because he's in the same club as him, so Owen's Paddy's brother. But on the way back up the road, Baker Bradley, who's Paddy's dad, was apparently like so annoyed at Paddy because he said that you were driving into him, Brian, and Paddy wasn't giving you anything back. He was Baker was saying, like, you know, this is county football now, you need to harden up, and apparently you were the making of Paddy Bradley.
Isn't that desperate? An experienced player beating the shit out of a little 18-year-old and his very first debut.
I was just teaching him some tricks. What was ahead of him?
Right, okay, lads, some good news anyway. So, like, I mean, there was TDs and different ones tripping over themselves to break this news, the good news story that we're obviously out of level 5 into some sort of a level 3, and full panels now are going to be allowed in Croke Park, which seems fair enough. Like, I mean, 26 being allowed in and the rest not, isn't very fair. But I'll tell you another thing, Brian, that isn't very fair. And I'm just kind of thinking about it now that you just kind of think about the 26. Like, I mean, imagine not being in the 26 and not getting to tog out. Like, you are training as much as everybody else. I can remember my disappointment at not making the first 15. Now there's fellas giving up their lives, giving up their, a lot of things to go down and train and not be in the match day squad of the 26. Like, I just can't comprehend that. That wouldn't even be a decision for me. I'd be on Hill 16 watching it instead.
Yeah, it is crazy. Those rules came in years ago, didn't they, where they changed the numbers. But yeah, I was talking to even Kevin O'Halloran and Alan Maloney and guys like that, never got to tug out on the day in Munster final against Cork. And, you know, Kevin was pivotal in the 2016 team. He got the last couple of scores to beat Cork that day in 2016 in the Munster final. So for those type of guys not to be able to tug out who've been there for years, that is tough. But I remember as well, when you look back in it too, like when we went in under the Hogan stand on the bus after coming from the Gibson Hotel, actually, that's where the Dublin team prepared, I think, for matches. We thought we were great. if it works for them, it should work for us. That was our mantra. But going under the Hogan stand in the Tipperary bus, I remember pulling up and getting out of the bus with the lads, and then suddenly two Mayo buses pulled up behind us, one for the management team players and the other for their extended backroom team. And we were kind of laughing at it, but it just shows you maybe COVID, they won't be allowed in with the two buses this weekend.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, obviously, you were talking about the 2016 game. You were in the backroom team for Tipperary. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Like, I mean, I don't know, Conan. Like, I mean, people talk about the 26 and all this. You're still not togging out. You're still just sitting in the stand. Am I right in saying that? Like, I mean, only 26 can tog out. I think that's equally as lousy. Surely there should be a nice round number of 30, which would be an A versus B game. And obviously, you know, it would get most of the people who are there training togged out.
Yeah, and then you're wondering, like, should there just be a cap on county squads anyway? Because, like, you are raising an interesting point. We were saying the last few weeks how harsh it is on these players who are doing all that work and then they're not even allowed to go to the game. But there is another element. It's like, do you really want to stand freezing in Croke Park when you know you have no part to play? And, like, yeah, you're probably going to be given some shit job. Like, you know, you do the stats there or, like, the. It is an interesting one. Like, I'm sure most of them would rather be there, and especially if they're doing all the work, they want to be part of it and go onto the pitch afterwards and be in the changing room. But
unless you do a John Terry, you're in your civvies though, right?
Yeah, you pull it off and you got your full gear on. Yeah, that's a big good shit.
Yeah, I'd say they probably would, or they'd feel a bit like frauds. You'd be in your normal gear.
30 sounds a round number too for the warm up too. You take out the two goalies then, and you can have 2 7-a-side games there.
Yeah. 20, well, I suppose 26 you can do that as well. Yeah. Well, no, yeah, you can have 7-a-side games when you take out the 2 goalies. And I do think 26 is a weird number when, you know, a panel at 30 would at least be your A versus B games, you know, and I'm sure panels are bigger, but if you're not in the 30, I would say, look, lads, just, you know, go have a pint and you'd be all right. Come here, James Horan was talking about crowds, lads, and this is an interesting one because I always thought that the crowds for the likes of Mayo drove the team on, and you know they're a huge kind of advantage to them, and I would say the same thing about Dublin. And then James Horan's kind of painting a different picture. He's talking about the 2013 final, the day Andy Moran got a goal in the second half to level the game up, and he said, would it have changed things that day? I don't know, but there was a sense of anxiety that day that came as opposed to taking the moment. I felt it a little bit. Yeah, there was a sense of anxiety that day that came as opposed to taking the moment. So, like, I mean, he's talking about the anxiety kind of coming from the crowd when they did go level. And I'm immediately thinking of the Lee Keegan goal in 2017, which put them ahead. And then that sense of anxiety. And I don't know, Brian, is James Horan fair to say that that comes from the crowd? Or is that just coming from everyone that's from Mayo, including the players and the management?
Yeah, it comes from both, I suppose. Like Mayo having a crowd, like Tipperary won't have a big support. So definitely you would think Mayo having a big crowd will have a big impact to them. But now, obviously, that won't be the case the weekend. But yeah, looking back at my own experience, in 2016, when Tip played Cork, we were leading with a couple of minutes to go and Cork started to come back into it because, you know, as sports psychologists talk about, you're looking at the end line rather than focusing on the process. But definitely the crowd start to, as the significance of the victory was there, the crowd definitely rose Cork in that particular game. And I suppose from the Kildare experience as well in 98, definitely the anxiety built in there when we it took us 2 games to beat Dublin after we beat Laois. Then after that, do you remember that? it took us 2 games to beat Dublin, but it was definitely, there was a lot of anxiety at the end of the last 5 minutes when, you know, Kildare hadn't beaten Dublin or Meath or Kerry in that particular year. So the anxiety does build in, but that's where sports psychologists have changed that process.
Yeah, and I think as well, often in situations like this, anytime I remember myself getting nervous kind of on the pitch as the finishing line gets closer, it's usually a few leaders that don't maybe feel that nervousness or have to take on that responsibility that pull you over the line in those incidents, Conan.
Like, there's definitely an element of it. Like, I was thinking about the 2016, the first game. You remember they came from 6 points down and it looked like they were going to go on and just put the game to bed because they were the better team, and when they got into that position, they stopped. But I don't know even if that's a crowd. Maybe there is anxiety coming from the crowd, or is it just a case of, holy shit, we're almost there, 1951. You know, all this stuff comes into your mind anyway, regardless of the crowd. And to be honest, I was just thinking, like, you mentioned the crowd drive them on. Like, when you're playing Dublin, it's so easy for that game just to die and get out of sight. And I think the crowd have been so important for Mayo to keep them on it for 70 minutes. Like, they might maybe not help when the finish line is close. But I think if it wasn't for the crowd, then those games, like you see with most Dublin games, they just finish after 40, 50 minutes. And I think that could happen a bit more often with Dublin Mayo.
Paddy Christie was talking about that kind of anxiety during the week. He's in the Mayo or in the Tipperary backroom team. He might have taken your job, Brian, this year, but I didn't actually know about his Tipperary connections until this week. He was saying, I played in a Dublin team that lost so many big games in Leinster, 99, 2000, 2001 finals, all equally shit. By 2002, you were beginning to wonder. Tommy Lyons came in and he was telling us that we're going to do this and that, and there was no real evidence to back that up. You love his honesty there, don't you? He says, when you're consistently losing massive games, it does create doubt. That's probably why in the last 5 minutes against Cork, even though we were the better team, we limped over the line. History was against us and the fellas were nearly looking over their shoulders. That's natural because that's what had happened with us when we finally won the Leinster in 2002. I was a different player. And I suppose, Brian, that's it. Like, I mean, the crowd and stuff like that is irrelevant. It's that kind of anxiety that comes from not having won before. You need to get over that. And when you get over that, maybe like Tipperary did in Munster this year, now you're a different team. But getting over it that first time is the hard one.
Yeah, well, there's another side to two. Yeah, there's another side to two is pressure as well. And Tipperary players do kind of play off the cuff. They don't have the pressure of the supporters or the media in Tipperary putting pressure. So they play freely. And that anxiety probably doesn't manifest itself then in a pressure situation. It's just, yeah, the looking at the end line is probably the most important thing. But yeah, 2000, when we got the two goals against Dublin that Paddy's referring to in the second half, maybe the anxiety kicked into the Dublin team in that second half because we it seemed like, oh no, it's going to happen again maybe. That sort of thought process goes into their heads, you know?
Yeah, because like, I mean, the Dubs back in the noughties got that same anxiety from the crowd and from themselves, Conan. You'd often sense it in Croke Park when things were starting to turn against them. You could use their crowd against them because, you know, they're like, oh no, here we go again. Like, I'm trying to talk about the crowds maybe a little bit too much because they're not going to be a factor this weekend at all.
Yeah, it is. I remember in 2007, Derry were playing Dublin in Croke Park in the quarterfinal, and it's how quickly it just turns poisonous. Like, you know, the Dublin crowd when things obviously weren't going good, and the crowd almost as well are expecting them to not win. Like the way Paddy Christie's thinking that Tommy Lyons is talking bullshit, like the crowd are there just waiting for something to go wrong. And like I think I mentioned before, like they were jumping on top of Kieran Whelan for anything. Like, and he was obviously a god back then, but it was just how quickly that it got very vile. And I think the Derry crowd fed off that as well, and they were way more supportive, and the Derry team fed off that too, because you can hear the groans, the player, like I'm sure you've had it as well yourself. I don't know, do you get it as much, like, you know, with a Laois crowd as a Dublin crowd, but like it's not a nice sound, you know, when everyone's like, oh, like that loser again, you know, and that was happening. You could hear that in the Dublin crowd.
Yeah, Dublin obviously have moved on to a point where the crowd believes in them enough to allow mistakes happen and, you know, trust them. So Dublin have earned the right to not feel that anxiety from the crowd as much. Like, I mean, Thomas Galligan was talking about it, and Mickey Graham was talking about it. You know, they were talking about how much less pressure is on them because of no supporters at it and because of lockdowns and things like this. But they're going in against Dublin, Brian, I mentioned on the last show, and like, they have a huge advantage from Dublin, taken off Dublin.
Yeah, because the Hill 16 is not there. Yeah. You mean, is it? Yeah, yeah, exactly. I remember Mark and Jason Sherlock in front of Hill 16, and all you can hear is like 15,000 people behind you going, J-O, J-O, you know the song, and you're marking this guy and you're going, geez, I better win the next ball, or, you know, it does feed into you.
Well, that's it. When Dublin get goals, the stadium comes alive. Like, I think Cavan will be well in this game. We'll get onto that a little bit in part two. But definitely in a winter football with no crowd in Croke Park, I don't see this being a Leinster Championship type hammering. Here's one I want to throw at you, Brian, is David Power. And he said this, we mentioned this last week. He said, I said it before the Munster final, we're the kind of team that gets better with better opposition. And we know Tipperary were almost relegated to Division 4 this year. They never seem to get it together in the league or seem to have too much interest in the league. They're able to seem to be able to raise the game against better teams. And if they're playing a poorer team, they seem to play at that level as well. Like, they scraped over Limerick. I'm not saying Limerick are a poor team, but they were a Division 4 team. Like, you know these lads very well. Can you explain this one?
Yeah, well, some of it is just the nature of the guys at in the panel at the moment, but a lot of it's down to the tradition in Tipperary and the history there. Like, you've got to bear in mind, when I played league football for Tipperary, there might be 100 or 200 at a match, or after Tipperary got to the All-Ireland semi-final in 16, the first league match in 17, there was only 700 people at it. You know, then you go to Newbridge when I played with Kildare, there was 7,000 at a league match. So from motivation and a pure kind of pressure, you're going to be... I'm not saying you wouldn't be prepared for the league, but I think Tipperary people, they're great footballers, great skill levels. But I do think historically they get better as the year goes on, better as the championship kicks in on good ground, summer football. And like in 2016 there at Tipperary, you'll have heard that like we had to draw with Sligo to not go down to Division 4 and ended up in an All-Ireland semi-final.
So similar to this year?
Yeah, very similar to this year, yeah. And I think it's just... the Tip guys kind of, I won't say they don't care about the league, but the league is going to become more important now because of the two-tier system. But historically, the supporters, Tipperary people didn't mind whether Tip were in 3, 2 or 1. They look forward to the championship.
Right.
And when I played in 95, 96, 97, we played Kerry 3 years in a row, but we were always geared towards the championship and we kind of used the league to get fit for the championship. And it was that kind of 7 weeks from the 1st of April to the middle of May where the serious training was done.
Right, okay, that's interesting, Conan, because usually you think that the lower division teams are desperate to get out of it, but Tipperary might be a little bit more like, ah, look, what's the big deal here? Let's just get ready for the championship.
I was just wondering if Tipperary are the sort of team who play at whatever level they're playing at, the only other team better than them at that is Mayo. So what sort of fucking game are we going to have here? Like, what level do they play at? If they're both waiting for the other team to set the level?
Yeah, do we play at Division 1 level or do we play at Division 3 level? That's what we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen this weekend. Before we get into that match, we'll start with that match. I was just looking in the Examiner there and they were talking about the use of the advanced mark. And like, Cavan have played 4 games and they have 3 marks. Dublin have played 3 games and have 3 marks. I could be wrong, but Paddy Small seems to get every single mark they get. Tipperary have 3 games and 2 marks. And that was those two were Conor Sweeney in the final in either half. And Mayo have had 3 games and 1 mark. Now, excuse me, lads. Now, I don't want to get into whether we like the advanced mark or not, because, you know, most people don't like it. But what I'm wondering is, Brian, it's in the game. Whether you like it or not, it's a very, very easy shot at the goals. How are we not seeing more teams working on getting an easy mark and an easy score?
That's a great question. I think there's a number of reasons for that, Colm. I think pressure probably in terms of stats and efficiency and turnover rates, you know, all this tracking by the stats teams puts pressure and possession being paramount is one aspect to it. They don't want to give the ball away. But I do think in Croke Park the next day, you probably will see more marks because of the dimensions of the pitch. But also another factor too is probably winter versus summer winter time. And also teams haven't really got a chance to properly work on this mark during the summer with COVID and all that. I suppose defences too are closing down that middle channel in front of the D, and they're like, okay, if you want a mark, you can have it out by the sideline, but you're not going to be able to score during the winter out by the sideline.
Yeah, I know, and I take all those points on board, Conan, but like, I mean, and I do take all that. It is winter football, it's harder to get them, but I haven't seen any evidence from any team. I haven't seen watched a game and gone, Jesus, they've done a good bit of work on the mark. You know, they're clearly, you know, trying to get them, you know, really, you know, they just come about rather than, you know, watching a half of football and going, geez, yeah, they look like they've been working on that.
Well, that's it. And to be honest, I will be very disappointed in Cavan if they don't do it, because I watched back the 3 Dublin matches, just looking for any ray of hope that they can be got at. Like, and Dublin conceded 27 points in 3 games, and like 3 of them were from the advanced mark, but there were 4 occasions where the other team won the advanced mark and just had enough space to turn around and score. So that's 7 scores out of 20. Now, it's not a lot of scores they're giving away anyway, but Dublin are loose at the back and they're open, and you know, there's just a lot of space there to be kicked into. It's so surprising to think, like, every time a team kicks the ball forward, the player is usually out in front to win it. So if Cavan, of all teams, aren't trying to exploit that, it seems to be a bit of a weakness of Dublin. Whether it's enough to beat them or not, I don't know. But and it's obviously a strength of Cavan. So if they don't try to utilise it, like, I don't know if all hope is gone. And you're right, like, whether or not you like the advanced mark or not, it's in. Use it. It's a very handy way of scoring.
And especially against Dublin, because they're so hard to get through when they drop players behind the ball, that surely to God, Cavan's game plan would be built around getting marks. I don't want to use up my analysis for that game, lads, because I want to get into the Mayo Tipperary, because obviously this one is going to be closer of the two. So we'll cover that one first. David Power was saying during the week, Brian, that we won't fear Mayo. I believe in this Tipperary football team, that if we get a performance, that we'll be very close to Mayo. And I tend to agree with David Power. Like, I mean, you only have to look at the 2016 game. There was nothing in this game other than a late Tipperary goal kind of put it to bed. Like, Tipperary wouldn't have any fear of Mayo whatsoever, Brian. And like, obviously going up to an All-Ireland semi-final, when you see the kind of boat Cavan are in, not being afraid in any way of your opposition is a good place to start.
Yeah, they're very like actually Tipperary and Cavan, and they, which is kind of interesting. In 2017, both of them came head to head in the last game to get into Division One, but they're both two maverick type teams, and that's the way Tipperary play. And there's a bit of tradition and inner belief there. A lot of them have won All Ireland's playing hurling, and they've won underage obviously in the football recently, not in the past, but so there is an inner belief in the Tipperary lads. I used to slag even. Willie McCreary and Glenn Ryan when I came up to Kildare and said, how come you've never beaten Dublin, lads? And I learned to shut up anyway saying that, Glenn and Willie. But sorry, going off the mark there. But yeah, definitely they believe they can beat Mayo. But they're an interesting bunch of guys. They're intelligent footballers. They're a real solid unit, and they all work for each other and socialise together outside of football, which is interesting. So they're a very galvanised unit, and they will believe that they can beat Mayo. And a lot of the same players are there since 2016.
Yeah, I was counting it there. 9 starters for Tipperary that started in 2016 started against Cork in the final. Where's Josh Keane, as a matter of interest?
Yeah, Josh went travelling, actually. Yeah, he's a big loss there as well. Yeah. But I suppose the one thing in the middle third, Josh was one of the fielders, and Tipperary have probably inherited a few in that area since. So
yeah, maybe the one. But there's no doubt Conan, Tipperary won't have faced a team of Mayo's kind of calibre when it comes to pressing kickouts, when it comes to work rate, when it comes to that famous word energy that James Horan uses. And here's a stat that Eamon Donoghue had in the Irish Times, always like his pieces. Mayo has made 68 turnovers. Either dispossessions, interceptions or whatever. 32 of them, or 47% of them, were made by a forward. Like, Tipperary won't have met a team that doesn't tackle the whole way back. You know, it doesn't say, right, okay, we didn't win that turnover, we'll you know, filter back. Mayo tackle you as you're trying to get up the field. You don't get up there easily.
No, and it couldn't be a more light and day sort of comparison as well between how Cork tried to break a team down with men back and how Mayo tried to break a team down. Like, Mayo were just fed up waiting around, and they just go at you. Like, it's such an interesting matchup, because I think almost both teams have a strength where the other is a little bit weak. And I think, like, you know, Tipperary are going to, like, we always talk about David Clark's kickouts, but they're going to force him to go long as well, as much as Mayo's going to press Tipperary. But Clark is going to be forced to go long. Tipperary want that because they're big and they're strong and they're animalistic around the middle. But then, you know, whatever amount of bodies the Tipperary drop back, like, Mayo are just going to go at them. Like, I was thinking about Brian Fox and all the good work he did the last day, and, you know, coming back and just making himself energetic, as you say. But, like, I think Oisín Mullen will pick him up and just go to town. Like, and you can't leave Oisín Mullen free, you know. And there's little elements of that that's going to happen all around the pitch, where Mayo will be liking what Tipperary are doing and the way they're setting up. Meanwhile, Tipperary will get advantages, I think, from what Mayo are doing.
Yeah, I don't fancy being in Brian Fox's shoes if that matchup does come about, considering the age profile of the two of them and the way Oisín Mullen attacks. Here's an interesting one, though, Brian, and it's all about the Mayo press and their strategy to press you high up the field. Like, they don't have a good fetching midfield. So here's the weird thing. Mayo put on an aggressive press, and always when you put on an aggressive press, you're hoping that the team that you're playing against goes into midfield. Mayo are forcing the opposition into an area where they're not that strong themselves. And wait till you hear this. This is a stat that Eamon had as well. In the Connacht Championship, teams kicked long against Mayo 81% of the time. Now, that's obviously a combination of Mayo forcing them to do it and them actually wanting to do it anyway. And he said that 72% of the time, Mayo lost that kick out. So in a weird way, Mayo's press actually works better if the team goes short because they can turn them over. Whereas if they go long, the press actually works against them. Am I making sense?
No, you certainly are, Colm. I think the key here is the middle third Tipperary, I think, had 12 turnovers in the first half and scored 5 points from it. So it's one thing the ball going out to the middle, but it's gone winning the turnovers. But Evan Comfort can go short, he can go long. The players in the back line in Tipperary are able to carry it. They're also able to win it, as we know, out in the middle third. So I agree with you, though. If Mayo do press and Tipperary get a long kick out off, and then suddenly the ball is gone inside to Michael and Connor, then there's danger there. So Mayo have a lot of, I believe Mayo have a good few dilemmas here. You know, does Aidan O'Shea go out to the middle and help the kick outs in the middle? Does he stay in full forward? Does Clark go short himself, or does he go long? Do Mayo start with some of their older experienced players that have been on the bench? There's a lot of unknowns that we don't know what Mayo are going to do, whereas Tipperary are going to play the same way. They play as a unit, but they can carry it or they can kick it in long. So it's going to be an interesting game.
No, it definitely will. What do you think Tipperary will do? You'd imagine Comerford will go long, Conan, based off those stats and based off the fact that Roscommon gave Mayo even a lot of trouble in midfield, who wouldn't be known have a strong midfield. And you have fellas like O'Riordan, you have Stephen O'Brien, you know, you have Casey out there, fellas who are well, you know, there's a big advantage for Tipperary. For me, it doesn't make any sense for them to go short and risk that turnover. Half of the Mayo turnovers coming from the forwards.
I would be very surprised if they ever look to go short once. Like, I don't know why they would want to do it, because like we know how good at defending Mayo are as well, one-on-one. So even from an attacking point of view, you want to win the ball high up and get it in early and get it into like two of the best forwards in the country as well, by the way. So you want to try and to set them loose. So it just suits them like in every way, whatever way you slice it. And yeah, like Brian's talking about Aidan O'Shea, I don't think there's a scenario where Mayo will get away with not being able to bring Aidan O'Shea out, because as you mentioned, Willie, like O'Riordan, O'Brien, Casey, like you have Matthew Ruan, I think Stephen Cohen might be important to one of those three, and then
I see Cohen having to go in on either Sweeney or Quinlivan. I'm thinking Sweeney. I don't think Cohen will be out there at all.
Jesus, and then if that's the case, like what's happening then? Because you already have like Conor Loftus out there, you know, so I think Aidan O'Shea is definitely going to have to come out anyway. There's three big, physically big and just like mentally big problems for Mayo around that middle, and I think Tipperary will definitely go for it. And yeah, like Mayo, we're going to have three players that can match up with them out there.
Tip went long with their kickouts, Brian, 83% of the time against Cork. So they're doing this anyways. It's just that they're definitely going to do it because they have big, strong men out around that middle third. So the point I'm making is that Mayo's press, which is a big advantage for them and it's a big plus, could be ineffective.
Yeah, correct. And it's not just about fielding the ball as well. Colin Reardon caught some great balls at the end of the Cork game, which were long ones needed. But Coleman Kennedy, Brian Fox, Robbie Kiley, they're picking up the breaks as well. So it's going to be interesting. But I think like Joe Hayes doing a lot of work from talking to him earlier in the year with Evan and Paul Fitzgerald did in the last couple of years. And Evan can ping them long, he can ping them short. So it's going to be interesting.
It definitely will. What do you make of the kickouts, Brian? Because we've been talking on the show a good bit about teams going short and trying to put it through the pin of a needle too often, trying to do what Stephen Cluxton does. When Stephen Cluxton is a very, very unique player, you don't see a corner forward that's not as good as Gooch being told to do what Gooch does. Do you know what I mean? You see Galligan, for example, against Donegal. He went long 14 of 16 kickouts. I see the weaker teams. I don't mean that in a bad way. Weaker teams are in the bloody All-Ireland semi-finals, but I see teams starting to go, here, what are we doing here? We're losing ball in our half-back line with super short kickouts and scores are coming off them.
Yeah, like it depends on personnel, obviously. I remember 2016, we had George Hannigan and Peter Aitchison in the middle of the field, and you had Josh on the right, and then you were hoping Michael Quinlivan might come out. That was it. They were your, and Peter was more of a movement midfielder rather than standing holding his ground in the middle. So we had a different type of system then. The lads have a very good system this year based on personnel. But I feel like the way the rule has gone now with the kick out, with the 13 metres around the D, I think it's a great for the referees because they know exactly how far the ball has to go. But it's you're finding full back lines are wrapping around the D. There's space down the wings. But teams now are able to, what's happening in the modern game too is when teams win the ball short, what we're starting to see now is the midfielders and the half forwards are running away from the play. They're running down the field towards the opposite direction and they're opening up a kick pass. And then there's a dilemma for the other team. Do they follow those midfielders, half forwards that are running away from your wing backs, or are they, rather than coming back, trying to help you and take the ball off you? It's a kind of risk versus reward.
Yeah, no, that probably makes sense, trying to get ahead of the ball, Conan. We always talk about that you've no kick options unless you have players ahead of the ball.
And that's it. And like we talked, remember, like you mentioned Roscommon there, like Mayo having this mad press up and Roscommon just ignoring it. Mayo were vocal. They were all in position. They were like really up for trying to trap them and Roscommon just went long and won the ball. And like how risky would that have been as well? They just had to try to like find that short kick out at any cost because you know, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been completely eaten up. Meanwhile, they could expose him inside. And again, we're, like I mentioned that Quinn Livin and Sweeney are up top. So why would you not want to win it in midfield, turn around and get it into them? And then like ask that question of Mayo, just play a quicker game because that's like you can be damn sure that Mayo are going to run the legs off you. And like I am worried a little bit about like Owen McLaughlin and Paddy Durkin. I just don't know. Like, I don't think there's anybody there to tag them. Like I think the two Kennedys will probably just drop back and free them boys up. So when Tipperary are playing, I think they have to play just a much quicker, much longer game.
Yeah. Now, one point we should make about the kickouts is that obviously you can't give it back to the goalkeeper now. Maybe that's feeding into the longer kickouts as well, you know?
Yeah, a lot of teams, though, Colin, are kind of working around that. So you give it to a corner back and then he gives it to the other corner back. So, and then it goes to the keeper.
Then it goes to the keeper, yeah.
So there's ways around everything.
There is, yeah. But you've Aidan O'Shea torturing you as you're trying to do this, I suppose, maybe. Well, with his strength, like he's getting a lot of their turnovers up there. He's a menace up there, Brian. And it's hard to know. I agree with Conan and yourself. Like there is points in that game where he's going to be needed in midfield, especially if the games pan out like Roscommon and Galway, where Mayo are being outfielded. But at the same time, like the damage he does in there, you know, and Mayo are getting a lot of their scores off Conroy, O'Shea and Killian O'Connor in there. And it's hard to know, as a tip man, where would you prefer to see him?
To be honest with you, I think the full back line of Tipperary is underestimated. Jimmy Feen has gone back to full back. He was always a full back at underage level. So, also Colm O'Shaughnessy and Jimmy Feen were in the full back line against McHugh and Cormac Costello in the under 21 semi final before they played Tyrone that year. So, and Alan Campbell is the most consistent player in Tipperary in the last 15 years. So, there in 2016, Jimmy Feen and Colm O'Shaughnessy were only just turned 21. You know, they're now 23, 24. So, I think Tipperary full back line is very solid. Obviously, John Maher isn't around, but and Kieran MacDonald is not there from 16. But Jimmy Feehan, he's like the Sean O'Brien of rugby. He's a farming background.
Yeah, he's a hardy bit of stuff.
Yeah, and he's naturally strong from the farming side of things. So I don't know who's going to pick up who. I haven't been talking to anyone at Tipperary, but Jimmy would be well able to take Aidan O'Shea and or Alan Campbell.
Right, that would be it'd be interesting to see. How come we didn't see as much of Bill Maher bombing up the field anymore? It was a real feature of the 2016 team.
And maybe because they've been going long on the kickouts, Colin, which you just spoke about there earlier.
Yeah, but he could run off their shoulder.
I know he has. Himself and Robbie have been bombing down the wings, and Foxy as well. So Robbie will be really looking forward to this game as well after 2016.
Yeah, we saw a lot. Yeah, he got the black card early. The point I was making against Cork, we saw an awful lot more of Robbie Kiley attacking than we did of Bill Maher.
Yeah, well, that's because probably Robbie Kiley was playing seven. He'd normally be six there the last couple of years with Tipperary. So he's back out to the wing because Kevin Fahey has slotted in there at six and Jimmy's gone back full back. So that's probably why.
Right. Right. As a Tipperary man as well, another one for you. Like, I mean, are you worried about Oisin Mullen, Owen McLaughlin, Paddy Durkin, Lee Keegan? Like, I mean, you're talking about defenders who bomb forward. And I don't mean bomb forward in a Ryan McHugh kind of a style where they're running across the field and they're waiting. These Mayo boys don't wait around. You know, like, I mean, if your forwards drop off them to try and get back into zonal positions, it might not work.
Yeah, I agree with you, yeah. But I think the way Tipperary have been set up from looking in on the outside, they've been a kind of a defensive unit. They haven't been man-marking every opposition player. They've been kind of marking zonally in the middle channel or the middle third. They've been working as a unit, and they've alternated different people dropping back. And that's a sign of a good unit. Like Stephen O'Brien, Liam Casey, all these guys are able to drop back into defence if needed. I don't see the like certain players being told follow Paddy Durkin everywhere. The question is, Paddy Durkin marked Michael Quinlivan in 2018. Will he mark him again?
Yeah, that's the big question. Lee Keegan obviously marked him in 16. Conan, we'll do a few matchups here. Because I think it's a mistake putting Paddy Durkin back in on Michael Quinlivan in the full back line, because obviously Michael Quinlivan used to come in and out a good bit. I don't think he'll be coming in and out based off the Munster final. And I think you're wasting Paddy Durkin, because, you know, Paddy Durkin did very well on Shane Walsh in the half forward line, taking the game to him. You're taking that power off him by putting him back in the full back line. I think that would be a mistake from Mayo's point of view.
I don't think he would do it. I think they seem to be seeing Lee Keegan as that player now anyway, where we're thinking, are they tampering him a little bit? Like, can they let him off the leash a bit more? But they're just assigning him these roles. So I think it would be Keegan. And also just the way, I don't think James Horan looks at Paddy Durkin like that. Like, you know, we talked about him shouting on like to Paddy Durkin. There was a stage against Galway where you could hear, like, you just hear, go Paddy, go! And he's like in his own half, like, you know, but like James Horan is roaring at him to get up the pitch, almost like, you know, that player underage who's just so far ahead of everybody else. When he gets the ball, you just go. And I think they will never want to sort of tie him up with somebody like...
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they do put him on, like, they put him on Enda Smith and they put him on Shane Walsh. But those two played in the half-forward line. You know, that's the point they're making. I think it might be a bit of a push to put him back in the full-back line.
No, I think so. And I think, like, you know, Lee Keegan will be well suited to him. He's matched him there before. He's played the whole season in the fullback line. And I just think, like, Durkin wants to be... Like, the reason, like, yeah, with Enda Smith and Shane Walsh, he can expose them because they're going to track him and he can take them on up the pitch as well. Would Michael Quinlivan do that? I'd imagine Tipperary will have those conversations beforehand. Brian's talking about that zonal thing that they've got going on. Like, they don't need Michael Quinlivan following whoever it is back the whole way down. So I think Durkin has to be freed of those shackles anyway.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, I mean, you have Dirk, if you have Lee Keegan on Quinlivan, you know, having Barrett on Sweeney, Brian, there's a definite advantage for Tipperary there. There's no doubt in that area, Lee, that you can see that from the players just standing beside each other. That's why I was thinking maybe Stephen Cohen might be put back in on one of them, just to have some sort of size in there and not have two big men who are decent in the air in Quinlivan and Sweeney against two smaller markers.
Yeah, and there you go. All the decisions that you're talking about there seem to be Mayo have got to make decisions. And hopefully they overthink all these things, which they have.
Like I do.
And Mayo have done it in the past too. They've switched goalkeepers and so on, and we won't go into that. But look, the bottom line is I think Tipperary can give the ball in high. And you saw that against Cork. They're not afraid to kick it in. Once Cork didn't have the double sweeper, or they didn't have cover back, Tip will kick it in. They're not afraid to kick it in. They can run it if the other team have sweepers, as we saw down the wing, and then the likes of Sweeney, Quinlivan come around on the loop. So Tipperary can play different ways, and they can come right down the middle too with Liam Casey and Stephen O'Brien and Colin as well. So Tipperary have a variety to their game. And you might think I'm talking up Tipperary here, but I'm just talking about the positive sides to their game and how they can counteract what Mayo do.
Yeah, no, they have a nice variety. We were saying on the Monday, Brian, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that Tipperary were playing a double sweeper a lot of the time against Cork. And, you know, Cork allowed them have it. And it completely cut down any options Cork had in the full forward line. And it played into Tipperary's hands. And when Tipperary got turnovers around the 45, they looked fantastic breaking. Now, I'm wondering, will Mayo give them the turnovers that Cork gave them, number one? And number two, will Mayo allow Tipperary the double sweeper? Or will they say, here, let's move our whole team up into the Tipperary half. Every man will have a man. Mayo are well used to doing that against Dublin. And, you know, that's what I think the good teams do against teams who want to drop players back in zones. They just don't give them that, you know, and will Tipperary be ready for not being able to double up to the extent that they were against Cork?
Yeah, but if Mayo push up and double up on any defensive players that Tip have back there, it's going to leave space in the forward line of Tipperary then. So it's a double-edged sword every time.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose that's it, Conan. It's a matter of taking the double sweepers away from a team on both sides. And if you do that, well, then potentially if Aidan O'Shea is in the full forward line, now, as we've said before, now that kick pass into him will open up. And, you know, if he catches it, players are concerned about who they're meant to be kind of marking rather than being able to double up on him.
Yeah, this is why I think that the Tipperary are probably a bit more predictable coming into it. Like, I think they're still going to ask questions and pose problems, a lot of problems for Mayo, but I think they'll still set up the same way. They'll still have the same units around the middle. They'll still have the boys dropping back, because I think that's their personnel, and it suits their team, and it suits them to free up space as well for Sweeney and Quinn Livin. And I think for Mayo then, it allows them to be the team who offer the most variation, and I think that they will just be flexible. Like, that's when you get the best out of Aidan O'Shea, when you can bring him out when you need him out, and then you can put him back in. And like, Aidan O'Shea can go inside and not even do anything, but he's still such an asset for them in there, because it's Aidan O'Shea and nobody's leaving him free in there, and he's causing them a headache. There's usually, if there is a sweeper or a spare man, he's usually keeping an eye on Aidan O'Shea as well. And that's just, like, we've seen it already, it just frees up Killian O'Connor and Conroy, and it actually frees up O'Connor to come out deep as well. Like, he's gone very deep this season and just gotten his hands on ball. He's a great kick passer. He's got good vision. Like, I always find corner forwards are usually the best kick passers, because they know that the type of ball that the corner forward wants, you know. So when you have Aidan O'Shea in there, that just gives them that little flexibility. And I think I just don't see what way Tipperary can counteract those four that you mentioned, like, you know, McLaughlin and Mullen and Durkin and Keegan. Like, you know, Quinn Livin is maybe one of them, because he'll keep Keegan wrapped up. But then there's still three others. And if you push up on them, I still don't think they win one-on-one. And I don't think they cause them enough problems attacking them. And if you drop back, I think, as you say, they just go straight through you. They don't go around the outside.
Yeah, no, definitely going to be difficult for them. We'll finish up here on this one on predictions, Brian. It's fairly easy to get your one.
Yeah, I think Tipperary, given that they didn't get to play in Croke Park there for Bloody Sunday, it'll give them an extra incentive going in there this weekend, given the year that's in it now, in front of the Hogan Stand and in front of the Hill. Hopefully the 2020 Michael Hogan will be looking down on them. But look, there's a performance coming again. They've had 2 weeks since the Munster final, so best of luck to David and all his team. They've done a fantastic job already this year. And they're in bonus territory, but I think this is the opportunity to repeat the 1920 final.
Well, there you go, Conan. And I'll throw it to you next, because we know the forces with Tipperary here, and we were powerless in our predictions before the provincial finals. The final in 1920 was Tipperary-Dublin, and Tipperary won it. Now, I don't think the force will even help them if they get to the final against Dublin, but it might help them against Mayo.
I meant to ask, because you were threatening to go to Mass. Did you end up going?
No, I need more evidence, Conan. I need more evidence. If Tipperary win, I'll seriously consider it.
Yeah, I still need a bit more evidence about the force as well. I think it's going to be an absolute cracker match, but I think Mayo will, their running power. I even think Conor Ossis could have a big game. Just like, I think he'll struggle, obviously, around the middle with the kickouts and stuff like that, but I think it could just cause them problems going forward, and that's what they want them there for as well. So I think Mayo will nick it.
Yeah, it's a difficult one considering the forces behind Tipperary. I don't think there'll be anything in it. I'm not sure it's going to be a classic, if I'm being honest, because I think that, like I said, Cork made Tipperary look great by giving them easy turnovers. I don't think Mayo will do that. I think it'll be a more tactical game. Although, in fairness, both teams are usually often involved in classics. But I think Mayo, Jesus, lads, there'll be nothing in this. There'll be nothing in this game. I don't know. I just kind of have in my head it'll be a Mayo Dublin final. But I would not be in any bit surprised. I'm going for Mayo tentatively. That's all I'm going. And this could easily be a Tipperary win or a draw or anything like that. Right, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with the other semi-final.
The best bit of the advice he gave me back then was we were in the Glenroy on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
All right, so Dublin versus Cavan, lads. This is Saturday night at 5:30. Dublin are 1-50, lads. So it's hard to know where you go with this one for starters. I think 1-50 is a bit of a disrespectful bet to Cavan, if I'm being honest. There's no evidence to suggest Cavan are 1-50 outsiders against Dublin. I would understand that against teams who Dublin have done that, you know, to before in Leinster a lot of times. I think for the Ulster champions to be put in at 1-50 against Dublin, Brian, I think that's a bit disrespectful.
I think so as well. People at the start of the year were talking about Donegal going to put it up to Dublin, and Kerry were going to put it up to Dublin this year. So if you were handicapping horses or anything like that, you'd be saying that both Cavan and Tipperary and Cork have beaten the likes of Kerry and Donegal, so they should be higher up the pecking order with the likes of Mayo on that. So on a line of form this time of the year, the way Cavan, the momentum that Cavan have gone, there's no reason why they can't put in a big performance against Dublin. But on the flip side of that, when you look at the likes of Brian Howard is starting to make strides now in Dublin, Paul Mannion isn't getting on the team. It's only stronger Dublin seem to be getting, so it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, and Cavan obviously don't have much experience playing in Croke Park. Now, two of their players, Killian Clark and Jason McLaughlin, they've played championship. They've started championship, and Killian Brady came on as a sub in 2013 against London. So Dublin obviously have a big experience playing in Croke Park, but it's not the Croke Park as usual that we'd be talking about, Conan. This is a pitch, right? It's a pitch with a fantastic stadium that will be empty. Do you know? So Dublin, their advantage in Croke Park now compared to what it would be if it was a full stadium, it's nowhere near the same. Obviously they're going to have an advantage where their forwards kind of know their range, you know, kind of like when you get into Croke Park for the first time. Like, I always found kicking into Hill 16 was very misleading. I always thought I was further away from the goal. You could be standing inside the 45, which you'd feel is within your range on the canal end. Mm. But so on the Hill 16 end, it's like, Jesus, I'll never reach the goal from here. And you're standing in the same place. I don't know what it is. It's about the terrace. So there's definitely things like that. Cavan haven't had an opportunity to go and play or do a training session on Croke Park, which sometimes I think maybe you can. I was reading Mickey Graham saying that. But it is not the advantage to Dublin, you know, that it usually is.
It's just not the disadvantage to Cavan that I think everybody was sort of making it out. I thought that some of the narrative, remember we were talking about taking the game out of Croke Park, playing it in Navan, thought it was almost like borderline insulting to Cavan as well. Like, you know, Cavan are a good kicking team. They're very athletic. Like, you know, Croke Park, the pitch, as you say, like the size of it will suit Cavan. Like, they're well able for it. And like, yeah, like 1-50 is disgraceful odds. Like, they're the Ulster champions. They've won 4 games. They beat Monaghan. They beat Down. They beat Donegal. They were behind in all those matches. Like, everything we know up until this point is that Cavan are not a flash in the pan. Like, you know, they're a team who have been asked questions. They're a team who looked dead and buried, and they've come back. And yeah, over the course of 4 matches, they've proven their worth. They've won the Ulster title. They're by far the most, like, you know, successful county in Ulster, like, by a distance. You know, so that we talk about tradition before, like, you know, the former players of Cavan and their parents and grandparents and stuff would expect Cavan to be winning things, like, you know, so it's almost a bit more of a natural title for them to be coming in here as Ulster champions. Like,
yeah, now they have 40 Ulster titles, but they've only 5 All Ireland, so maybe at this stage they might not have that with the same winning
mentality. Last 5 years, in fairness.
Come here, no, Brian. I was just like, just to get off this Croke Park advantage is, like, I always remember going to Croke Park, and the one thing that it was very difficult to get used to was the whole match day experience. It was the training up the road, it was getting the bus and a Garda escort, and it was all the Laois fans waving in at the bus, and it's very easy kind of lose your focus in situations like this. And then you arrive to Croke Park, you get out and walk on the field, and there's a buzz around the stadium even though it's only half full, and then you go back in, and it's just something that you've never experienced before. Like, I mean, the excitement is just, it's indescribable. And then you run out and there's a huge ovation with the crowd. And it might take you a few games to maybe get used to that. And for your management team to get used to what time you go up to Croke Park, where you warm up, you know, did the guard escort work? All these little small things. And, you know, that match day experience is not there for the Cavan players. It's just another pitch in a cool, empty stadium.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they'd be more happy that they've had 2 weeks to gather themselves. But look, the players are, the formats now for matches are all done out to a T. So the players will be following the exact same routine in terms of preparation, when they warm up, what they do an hour before, what they eat. So all those little processes help that a lot more in the modern game. So I've no fear for Cavan and Croke Park. They're a very they're a traditional county with huge support. They'll be looking forward to it. Remember, 1997 was the last time they're there, if I'm correct, in the All-Ireland semi-final. And I think somebody got married in Cavan and they got a helicopter up to Croke Park to watch the match, and then they got a helicopter back for the reception afterwards. They didn't want to miss the match. That's how much the couple, you know, love the football so much, and they do up there. And there's a lot of families involved, and, you know, the usual Rileys, Bradys on the Cavan teams, and they're there again. And they seem, like Tipperary, they seem to be getting better, though, as every game goes on. And given the year we've had in 2020 as well, the likes of Tipperary Cavan have got to play games with their clubs. It's helped their fitness levels. Then they've come into the Ulster and Munster Championships. They've both got a couple of games. Because even Thomas Galligan, did he not start in the first couple of games against Antrim, Monaghan? And then he's suddenly becoming a starter. So I think Cavan are in a good position. They've used 23 players so far in the Ulster Championship, which is a big number, which shows that they do have strength and depth, because they're going to need it when they unload the last five or six players against Dublin.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, Galligan, I think he got player of the month, and I'm sure he was asked about that. He made sure to tell people he was carrying a knock for those first two games, as in, now, lads, I'd make that team if I'm fully fit now, so don't be putting me down as a sub, which I like. He was also talking, Conan, he says, there's no pressure on us. We're going out and playing football. The favourites tag probably weighed heavily on Donegal, so hopefully it'll do the same to Dublin. I don't think that's going to happen, Thomas. You might as well hope for something else. He continues on. He says, I hope, or I suppose it's a little bit daunting. That's playing Dublin, but it's also exciting to be playing the best team in the country. You know where you're at after you play them. It might be a bit daunting or whatever, but I think more people will be excited to get playing. Now, I didn't really like those comments from Thomas Galligan. A Donegal player wouldn't say it. A Kerry player wouldn't say it, that it's daunting to play Dublin. Like, I mean, I don't know, Colin, am I reading too much into this, or should an Ulster champion be saying it's daunting to come and play Dublin in an empty stadium?
No, this is it. Like, there is that element as well, where they're a novel champion. They had, like, 97, was it? You know, so Dave, like, whatever happened against Dublin, this has been a monumental year for this team anyway. So there is that element, you know, and even like the conversation afterwards and the post-match interviews when they were being asked about Dublin, like, the interviewers were almost like laughing, like, oh, you have to play Dublin now, you know, whereas the tone would have been completely different if that was Donegal.
Yeah,
because, like, we've all been ready for Donegal to play Dublin. Now, maybe, like, you know, privately Cavan are thinking, like, you know, we're going to go down here and ambush them. I don't know, but, like, yeah, even just trying to say that Dublin are they've got the favourites tag, and, you know, they have to carry that. Like, when was the last time Dublin weren't favourites? 2011, probably, against Kerry. You know, like, they're well used to that now as well. I just hope that there's an inner belief in Cavan. Like, you know, maybe they might be saying all this stuff because they know that's what the conversation is, but I hope that they do believe, because I think they can hurt them as well. Like, you know, so I think they shouldn't be going down there daunted, in those words.
Yeah, no, obviously it's just an interview, and maybe he's throwing that out there and they're saying completely opposite privately. You'd imagine that they would. I think they have some good matchups for Dublin. Cavan have some very good defenders. Like, I mean, Faulkner will probably pick up Kilkenny, and he's comfortable going out to the half forward line. If that's where Kilkenny goes, he'd probably stay with him, because we know Kilkenny and Conn like to switch in and out. And I love that centre forward, full forward, being able to switch in and out. It just mixes things up a little bit, and often full backs aren't really comfortable going out to centre back, and maybe in the switchover things can get a little bit confusing, you know, Brian. But like, maybe Jason McLaughlin on Conor Callaghan, then, you know, Kieran Brady on Scully, Killian Clark on Howard or Bulger, whoever starts. We're not too sure who'll start there. Like, I mean, they have some good matchups in the defence, and then obviously Thomas Galligan and Conor Madden up front. And if Conor Madden simply has to start, I won't accept this sub role against Dublin because the game could be over. Start those two up front, get some good diagonal balls into them, get yourself some marks because both are very good in the air. I think, and it's winter football, you know, and there is nothing expected of him. I think Cavan, I wouldn't be looking at Cavan's prospects in this game anywhere near like a Leash or a Westmead or a Mead who've been beaten into submission.
Yeah, like if you look at what do you need to take on Dublin or to beat Dublin? First of all, you've got to be able to hold on to the ball. And Cavan are strong defenders. They're strong on the ball. They're physically strong. They're able to carry it out. They need to retain their own kick out. They have a very good goalkeeper who can go long, can go short. So they're ticking those two boxes. The middle of the field, then, they've Garrod McKiernan who can field the ball against anyone. Will Dublin, you know, will Brian Fenton maybe target him? I'm not sure, probably that match up there. But
I think James McCarthy is a guarantee to pick up McKiernan because McKiernan can go centre forward and McCarthy is equally comfortable centre back or midfield. I don't think Fenton will be picking up McKiernan. I think James McCarthy's made for him.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly right there, will he? Yeah. But on the flip side, what can a team do to try something different against Dublin? If there's any team equipped, it's probably Cavan. You saw they're not afraid to launch high ball into the full forward line and get it in very early before Dublin get their defence set up. And that's something that Cavan might try. We saw even Fermanagh had a bit of luck against Dublin a couple of years ago with that Dublin full back line, which is probably not the strongest line of the Dublin team.
No, it doesn't seem to be. And I think in the air, it's natural to say that they're not. Fitzsimons would probably take up Galligan, which, you know, aerially Fitzsimons isn't great, although he's a great sticky marker. And you'd have Davy Byrne taking up Madden inside. Like, I mean, you would say advantage Mayo there, but only, or advantage Cavan there, but only aerially, Conan. So what's the message here? Get it in early, aerially.
And like I think if Leash and Meave taught us anything, is that Dublin just look a little dodgy under those high balls as well. Like, you know, it's a long time since I remember Kerry trying this high ball in a league final, like, and they just constantly tried to put it in, and Rory O'Carroll was knocking it down for Philly McMahon. Like, it's not the same team, and as Brian says, like, they're a little weaker back there. Like, they're relatively probably still better than most people in the country, but you can see chinks in the armour back there. The Galligan thing and the Fitzsimons thing is interesting because I was trying to jot down, like, yeah, just matchups and how the teams would line up. And I was starting to think, I don't think there's any way that Howard can't play because, you know, what happens when Galligan goes out to the middle and like Cavan are top heavy around middle with all those big men that they have out around there? Like, it's just caused them such a problem. Does Fitzsimons follow them out there? Do they have enough players out there then to pick up Galligan when he's just looking to take those kickouts off Raymond? I think Cavan like can sort of, they can switch things up as well, the way like Kilkenny and Conn can do it. Galligan can go out, win kickouts and go back in and cause them problems. And like there was a ball in against Meave that just dropped in and it actually bounced in the like about 15 meters out from the Dublin goal. Like you wouldn't see that in a good underage team, but the fact it came in with snow coming down on it and it just bounced high up into there, and you know, Meave won it and they won a free, and it's just like, yeah, there's just a little bit of uncertainty in there with Dublin.
Yeah, we say it on the show the whole time that, like, I mean, the Dublin defence can be got at. And like, look at Owen Merchant, you have Johnny Cooper, you have McDade, you have Davy Byrne, who's a good player, but these lads aren't superhuman. Like, Brian Fenton is superhuman. But if a team's brave enough to potentially try and find weaknesses in the Dublin defence, Brian, it's just, for a lot of times, they just don't.
Yeah, and you saw that with Cooper as well over the years. He had problems against Clifford and stuff like that. But
but
look, Dublin are Q2. They're able to change mid-game if a team puts two big guys in. Even as you said, James McCarthy, I'm sure, could pop in full back if he had to, and they can adapt to whatever's thrown at them. And that's what makes Dublin such a good team. But look, hopefully over 70, 80 minutes, if Cavan keep playing the way they are and keep get enough possession, because possession is paramount against Dublin. You just can't give them the ball off your kick out or off their kick out. You've got to go at them two different ways, but you're not going to be able to press them every time either on their kick out. So you've got to just kind of have a hybrid type system when you're pressing them, and you just have to win all your own kick outs. And it could mean taking risks at times to win your short kick out.
Yeah, Galligan went long against Donegal, similar to Evan Comerford, who went long with 14 of 16 kickouts. Again, that's going to make perfect sense. Donegal have a good press. Dublin have the best press in the country. The problem for Galligan is how he's going to keep it away from Fenton, Conan, because you often see Fenton when you're at games and he's been dragged to one side and he kind of knows he's been pulled out. He's kind of leaving his man and trying to pawn him off to get across to where that ball is going to go. You know, it's vital because Fenton, like I said, I was talking about the backs, but Fenton is the one player on the Dublin team that no team really has a match for at the moment. Maybe David Moran or Jack Barry can track him, but fetching an all-round game, you know, Cavan are definitely going to have to come up with a plan. They're going to want to go long with the kickouts, and then they're going to want to keep it away from Fenton, and they're going to have to put, you know, they don't want enough hang time on that kickout that Fenton can get across to it.
Well, that's it. Like, the reason that everybody has a problem with Fenton is because he's just good at everything. Like, and his basic skills are phenomenal as well. Like, everything he does is just, you watch his kick pass and it always just lands in somebody's chest. Like, you know, there's never, he never takes 10 meters off it or anything like that. He's just a pristine player. And yeah, he's very smart. His game management is clever. He'll throw boys into positions that he knows that they're just trying to drag him out of. But the only thing I would say with Cavan is that they have so many options around the middle. Normally a team have two or three, a good team would have, you know, where they're trying to hit. But Cavan have four or five, you know, so they have a few more options. It will be harder for Fenton to try and cover the whole width of the pitch, and if Cavan can line all those boys up, then they can hit them wherever Fenton isn't.
Yeah, one thing, because Brian, we were doing the show on the Monday and we didn't talk about the Meath game at all because it was so one-sided. We talked about the Leinster Championship, but one thing Dublin showed, they showed their hand a little bit with Conor Callaghan as an option for kickouts from Cluxton straight down the middle in the centre half forward position, and he did it twice against Meath. And I was thinking, watching it at the time, why are you wasting this on Meath? You're hammering them. Don't do it. If you do it once, just don't do it a second time to make people think that this actually might be a new kickout option. But it is, but like, I mean, it's hard to know where Dublin are at, really, Brian, because like they're hammering Westmead, Laois and Meath, and say for example the unthinkable happened and Cavan beat them. Now it won't happen, if we're being honest. The analysis on the Monday then would be, geez, now, yeah, well, Dublin were getting it so easy, you know, and we never really knew where they were at. They have a new manager, you know, all this hindsight kind of analysis. But like, I mean, I see people lauding Dublin and lauding Desi Farrell. We actually don't know where they are at this year. They're not playing Howard and Mannion, which is madness as far as I'm concerned. And if Kerry were still in the championship, I would be saying there's a right final on here between these two.
Yeah, and maybe they're holding back. Maybe the idea was to peak Howard and Mannion for these games in the last two games. Maybe did an injury, we don't know, but you don't know anything because nothing comes out of the Dublin panel.
No.
We all probably talk too much. Maybe Dublin say nothing. But in relation to your kick out there about Conor Callaghan, the modern rules have dictated that, because what's happening is the Dublin full back line's coming around the D, their wing backs are coming down the sideline, the centre back is popping, the two midfielders are going to either wing, taking men, and it just leaves a hole down the middle. So
yeah.
If you want to press Dublin, you've got to be wary that there's other routes that Cluxton can go to. And that, on the flip side, that's the same for if Mayo press the likes of Tipperary, they can, and the midfielders go either side. You've got Mikey Quinlivan down the middle as well. So, you know, it's that type of scenario.
It is. It's funny, yes, in a Conan, because you see Galligan, that's an kick out option for Cavan, even when he's in the full forward line, that now someone in the full forward line is a kick out option in the centre half forward position. And it's a nice little kind of, you know, evolution of the game.
It is. Like, I was very impressed. I think Ekdi actually did it three times in a row in that first half, and like two, like they got the goal out of and then a score. But the problem with that is that it's when you go man to man. Like, you know, playing man to man is like, it's all right, but it's not aggressive. Like, you know, when you're playing man to man on a team who has their own kicker, they can do whatever they want then. Like, when all those cornerbacks, when they suck in, when the wing backs go out wide and you're playing man to man, you end up following them out. And what happens then is that Conor Callaghan, one of the best fielders in the game, is being picked up by a cornerback who has no interest and probably no experience in coming under a high ball from a kick out. You know, so if you are going to try and press Dublin, I think you have to commit to it. You have to bring a few more bodies there so you can cover the zones the way you want to do it and not have mismatches, because when you're playing man-on-man, you can just create mismatches easily. Or I was actually thinking, is it a bit too extreme? You either commit and overcommit and, like, you know, bring a few more men forward, or you just don't do it because you're not going to win it. You might, I don't know, will you win anything playing man-to-man against Dublin? Just drop back if you're not going to commit to it.
Yeah, yeah, but they're patient getting through that as well, you know.
I mean, mixing it up, like, you know, so if you, when you can do it, get up, and then when you're not going to do it, you might as well just get back because you're going to lose the kickout anyway.
Yeah. I was just thinking that these full forward lines coming out for kickouts now is like fighting back against attacking cornerbacks, where now ye making us concentrate the whole way through the game. Now cornerbacks have to concentrate for kickouts, Brian. This is like a nightmare for cornerbacks.
Yeah, that's the way the game has gone now with the rules. But in fairness, actually, Roscommon had one very good tactic against Mayo. When Mayo pressed Roscommon, Roscommon put four or five guys into a little spine right down between the midfield and the centre forward position, and they just went long. And they just hoped that they'd win it or it'd break, and there was loads of space to break into. So, you know, something like that, maybe Cavan could try as well against Dublin.
Yeah, no, it definitely could. Well, one other matchup I think that might happen, Conan, is that if James McCarthy picks up Garrod McKiernan, you could see John Small in midfield on James Smith, who's very, very good going forward. And it might be like, obviously, the modern game now where a lot of positions are kind of, you know, mixed around that middle third anyway, it wouldn't be any big deal for John Small to do that job.
And I think John Small would relish. I had him and McCarthy down on either of them, yeah, just a sort of bracket between both of them, like, because I think John Small could, he would struggle a little bit maybe on the kickouts with Garrod McKiernan, but I think again he would just love that challenge, like go you out and shut down Cavan's big man, you know, and he would just not leave him alone for the whole game. And maybe, like, are you losing something from James McCarthy by putting him on to Garrod McKiernan? Maybe not, but like John Small could do either, I think, and he'll do it well.
Yeah, he definitely could. Right, we'll get predictions here, Brian. What do you fancy now? Usually in Leinster, we go Dublin versus the handicap. I'm not going to disrespect Cavan by saying Cavan versus the handicap. The handicap's 14. I'm not saying that's in danger. I think Cavan, in at this time of the year, with the confidence that they have from the win in the Ulster, will be well able to put it up to Dublin. To a point. I think the last 15 minutes they won't be, but I think up to maybe 20 minutes to go, I think they'll be in the game.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think Cavan will meet the handicap, especially with the weather conditions. It's going to be cold, I think, on Sunday, so the ball is not going to be travelling as quick or sticking to hands as quick as well. So, but definitely, yeah, they have a good bench as well, Cavan, so they won't be short of impact from the bench in that last 20 minutes. And I do think Meath are better than what they produced as well against Dublin. I think the Kildare game took a small bit out of Meath. I think a week later after that Kildare game, so I wouldn't read too much into the Dublin Meath game.
Yeah, I think as well we were saying, Conan, it's very hard to have seen where Meath could hurt Dublin. You can kind of see with Galligan inside, with Madden inside, you know, we haven't even mentioned Martin Riley as a good industrious half forward who could play in some good ball. They've got good kick out options. You've got Garrod McKiernan who can hurt them. Big, strong, powerful men, Faulkner, Killian Clark. You've all these fellas who you can see won't kind of crumble against Dublin. Against with Mead, they're a little kind of small running team which can be swatted away. I don't want to disrespect Mead, but I just see Cavan having a lot more about them. And I do take Brian's point that Mead definitely are better than what they showed in the Leinster final.
And like there's almost a mentality thing as well. Like over the three Leinster games, Dublin conceded from frees only six times, or two times in each game that a team win a free that they scored. Like, Dublin's defenders aren't that clean. Like, you know, it just shows that the teams aren't going at them. Like, they're not having a cut. They see the blue jerseys and they're turning around. They're panicking. Like, you know, and a couple of those times, Paddy Small coming back. Like, Dublin bring their forwards back. If you see Paddy Small between you and the goals, go at him. Like, you know, he's not a good tackler. So I just hope that Cavan bring that sort of attitude. Like, yeah, they can definitely hurt Dublin. And they're a team who can expose a lot of Dublin's weaknesses. There's not a lot of them, but they can definitely do something that will rattle them anyway. So I hope that their mentality isn't just like one where, like, let's get everybody behind the ball and just, like, you know, hope that we can get through this. Because
if they do that, I'll be finished with Mickey Graham. I will. I think surely that you wouldn't know what Mickey Graham could do. Mickey Graham could do that for the first 20 minutes and then go out. You wouldn't know with him. I do like that about him. he's just so unpredictable, even within a game.
But there is I looked at those three matches, and only one time did a team get a score from a counter attack, basically from turning the ball from defence up to attack, and that wasn't because they had a load of bodies back. It was because Dublin missed a goal chance. There was a block on the line, and the ball got turned over, and then I think it was Leash who went up and scored. Yeah, it was Kingston who went up and scored. So it doesn't work. Like, we know that Dublin don't give the ball away. So you having bodies back, sometimes it might be necessary, but it's not a tactic to beat them. So I hope when Cavan get the ball, or when they're going on with an attacking game plan, it's right, let's get Gallagher inside, let's get Madden on, hopefully before 40 minutes have passed and the game might be over, get him on from the start or get him on very early, and let's go at them. Yeah, let's see what they're made of. Let's show off Martin Riley and Garrod McKiernan. Like, let's, you know, let's have a cut, because they can do it. Like, it's going to be a massive ask, but they can definitely throw punches at them.
Yeah, so to talk about Conor Madden, obviously, Brian, he's like a lot of players. He blows hot and cold. So he's, you know, can kick points from all angles when he's on it. And when he's not on it, he can look fairly ordinary. Now, what better arena to put a hot and cold player? Is like betting red or black in a casino. I'm going all in on black, and I'm putting Conor Madden in Croke Park starting, and I'm going on the 50-50 that this lad's going to shoot the lights out.
Yeah, and there you have it. Like, Cavan are going to need to hit 75% plus, you know, of attack to score ratio to win this game. The other side of it too, like, they have been in Division One, Cavan, so they have had experience, yeah, of playing Dublin, which will stand to them. They're not going to fear Dublin. They're going to go in there and have a right go at it. And the longer this year has gone on, the longer that the likes of Cavan have a chance to close that any fitness gaps that might appear between the likes of Dublin and Cavan.
Yeah, and the whole thing as well, just another point on Cavan here, Conan, is momentum and confidence. Leash, Westmead, Meath, all these teams, they don't have any of that. They have the opposite of that, if there is, you know, something that's the opposite. Like, I mean, and you know yourself as well, Brian, from winning Leinster's, the momentum just carries on into a semi-final. Like, I mean, you come on with a huge confidence, and Cavan are Ulster champions, and that's not, you know, to be sniffed at. And I think that momentum, we saw Fermanagh, for example, doing well against Dublin one year, even though they were beaten, they put up a good show. And that was just through momentum coming through a few wins in the qualifiers. You know, like the Leinster counties never have momentum really coming in against Dublin in a Leinster final, and have the whole 15 of 16 titles going to Dublin, and how that defeatist attitude that Cavan just simply won't have. And these are, you know, things that you can't, you know, they're not tangible, but they're there, and Cavan have them.
Yeah, like they've won more games than anybody this, you know, in this championship. They're used to winning now, and they've gone out twice against teams who were big favourites against them, and they've come from behind twice and beaten them. Like, so, yeah, like, that's as much as losing's a habit. Like, so is winning, and Cavan are in that habit. Like the last four times they've gone out, they've won, and now for the first time they got a week break. You know, or they got 2 week break. They got a weekend off there, so they're probably fresher than they have been as well after playing those four Ulster matches and a couple of extra times in there. So, yeah, like, I think it's, yeah, like, you know, look, it's not all set up for Cavan to go and win, but, like, there's definitely a lot of stuff in their favour, as well as having a good team that can expose some of Dublin's frailties.
Yeah, so I'm going, during the summer, this could get messy for Cavan. I think winter football, I think they can keep it below 10 points. That's the best I can do for Cavan. Conan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Dublin will win by more than 10. I think it'll be tight for a long time, and Cavan will, I think they will, you know, have a bit of success, but I think Dublin will win by just more than 10.
Brian?
I'm with you. I'm under 10 points as well.
Yeah, we wonder, is it wishful thinking here, lads, or are we being realistic here? So we'll be talking on Monday about that anyways. Right, we've got run out of time here, lads. We'll leave it there, and we'll be back on Monday. We'll review the two finals. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.